Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Infielder number 10, Trevor Story.
About 3 weeks ago, I was assigned to cover opening day at Fenway Park in Boston. Not bad work if you can get it. The sun was out and baseball was back.
Turner on at first. Dive and a miss there by Frazier. That's into the outfield. Rounding, here comes Devers. He will score. It's Turner.
So the Boston Red Sox gave up a ton of walks, played a sloppy game, and lost to the Baltimore Orioles 10-9. But it was fascinating to see the game being played with new rules put in place this season to speed up the action and address baseball's long-standing boredom problem. The new rules include a pitch clock, allowing no more than 20 seconds between pitches. There are also larger bases to encourage stealing and other rules to get more balls in play. Fans that I spoke to had different opinions about all this. Fans like Al McKim.
I think it's going to force the pitchers to kind of behave a little differently too, and the batters as well. We'll see how it goes. But like I said, I think it's important to keep the game kind of with a good pace and a good tone. I think that helps, at least trying to get the tempo back to what it used to be.
But Landon Harrell, a Red Sox fan who came all the way from Knoxville, Tennessee to attend opening day in Boston, said don't mess with baseball.
I think baseball is meant to be traditional, and in that way, I think, you know, they're harming the game more than they're helping the game. So,
really? So you don't think it's been too slow, too boring?
I don't. I'm a traditionalist, so I love the original game of baseball, and I think that's how it should be played.
Opinions may vary, but what's not up for debate is this. The new rules represent the biggest change to the national pastime, certainly in my lifetime. There are more balls in play, more stealing, and on average, games are running about a half hour shorter. On opening day, I saw pitchers working more quickly, and I watched Red Sox star third baseman Rafael Devers become the first player in Major League history to be called out for taking too long to get into the batter's box. Still, the game lasted more than 3 hours, thanks to more than a dozen walks, so yeah, the new rules appear to be working, even if they can't do anything about bad pitching. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. This hour, our national pastime and how those new rules are working out some 3 weeks into this season. Jeff Passan is a senior MLB insider at ESPN, and he joins us now to spend some time with us this hour. Jeff, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
I appreciate you doing so, Anthony. Thanks.
Yeah, it's really fun. I've been really looking forward to this hour. So I made reference to this as representing a big change to the game. How significant are these rule changes in your view to a baseball insider? I'm really curious to hear.
This is my 20th year covering baseball, Anthony, and the game looks absolutely nothing like it did in the first 19 seasons. And that, to me, is the most interesting part of this all. Major League Baseball has been a very successful business for well over a century. It's a game that's ingrained in the fabric of our culture, and even if it is no longer the national pastime per se, it's still an industry that creates $11 billion a year in value. And for six straight months has millions of people tuning in every night for what was 3+ hours per game, plus a pregame show, plus a postgame show. I mean, it's a real commitment to be a baseball fan. And so to turn around and see almost a half hour shaved off of the game strictly by cutting out the dead time that was there already and had been festering for years, it's a different experience for every fan who's watching the game right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think you told my producer, Claire, that you regard this as the biggest change since integration. I mean, so that says an enormous amount about how significant this change is.
Yeah, no question. It's the biggest on-field change. I mean, there have been certainly other things that have happened in baseball over the last 75 or so years that are notable and significant. But when integration happened, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, all of a sudden you just had this new world of talent that was coming in and making the game better. This isn't that. I think the goal from Major League Baseball here is to recognize a few things. Number one, that fans these days have expectation for their entertainment products. And that expectation is that it's going to engage you regularly, that it's not going to take up too much of your time, and that if there's a slog at all, there are plenty of other options out there for people to have. But as much as that, the players who are playing in 2023, Anthony, are more talented than they've ever been before. They have better training modalities. They have more knowledge. They're better athletes. So why would you take these superior players and have them do what they do best less? That's what the game had evolved into. And the hope in introducing the pitch clock and the larger bases and banning defensive shifts was that all of these great qualities and elements that players have these days would be highlighted as opposed to being shut down the way that they were under the old rules.
And Jeff, I wanted to just run through really quickly. You just did, but let's go into a little more detail, not too deep into the weeds, but for listeners who might not be completely up to date on what these new rules entail, run through them. First of all, the pitch clock. Tell us about that.
The pitch clock has a couple of different elements to it. One, of course, is the clock itself, which when there are no runners on base is 15 seconds, and the batter has to be in the batter's box and facing the pitcher and really just looking at the pitcher with 8 seconds. That clock moves up to 20 seconds for the pitcher, but remains at 8 seconds for the hitter when there are runners on base. And the other part of it is that you are only allowed to step off, whether it's stepping off the mound or having a pickoff move to first base or any of the other bases, twice during any at bat. Right. And there are penalties involved for running afoul of these. If you don't throw the pitch on time, it is an automatic ball. If you are not facing the pitcher on time as a hitter, it is an automatic strike. And if you step off a third time or have an unsuccessful third pickoff move, then it's a balk, which allows all runners on base to advance.
Right. Then you mentioned bigger bases, and among other things, that's supposed to make it easier to steal bases, and that appears to be working, right?
Yeah, it certainly does. Stolen bases are up 40% year over year. And the idea behind emphasizing stolen bases to Major League Baseball was part of a survey that they did at fans, Anthony, where they asked, what do you enjoy about baseball? Mm-hmm. And the answers were mostly rooted in action, whether it was balls being in play or triples, or in this case, stolen bases. And with the bases moving from 15 inches square to 18 inches square, that's 4.5 inches fewer distance between the two bases, and thus it's making them easier to steal. There's also a health and safety component too, but really the on-field stuff in terms of stolen base rates was the main aim there.
Right, and then finally, this is a big one as well, the end of the defensive shift, and this is when, for example, a left-handed hitter, all of the infielders would move over to the right field side of second base and out into right field to kind of cut down on a traditional base hit. It would just become pretty much a routine out. So now the players have to sort of stay arrayed on either side of second base. How big is that, that no more defensive shifting for the defense?
It's been great for left-handed hitters who, you know, there would be a third baseman shifted over into short right field and would be making plays there. That's not allowed anymore. It's great for singles. If you like singles, then you like baseball in 2023. You look at a number, batting average on balls in play, which historically has been around 300. You know, if you put the ball in play, it's going to land for a hit about 30% of the time. Over the last 3 years, that number had dipped to around 290, and it's back up to 298 this year. So it illustrates that there's just a specific way that the game goes that it had gotten away from. And if you talk with people at Major League Baseball, their perspective is that we're not trying to reinvent the game necessarily. We're just trying to bring it back to its natural order. And, right. you know, one could argue that a game's natural order is how it evolves. But I think Major League Baseball believes that it had evolved in the wrong way and had gotten away from some of the fundamental things that make baseball great.
Right. Well, speaking of people in Major League Baseball, MLB consultant Theo Epstein was among the driving forces behind these changes. So here's Epstein last September talking about the reasoning behind the new rules.
Fans of all different ages and all different levels of engagement were clear and consistent in their desire for faster pace of play, for more athleticism on display in the field and on the bases, for more balls in play, and for more action overall. So fans want to see more stolen bases, more triples and doubles, more plays with multiple players in action. Fans want less dead time, less of anything that slows down the pace of play and pace of action. So to get closer to that best version of baseball, to give fans more of what they like and less of what they dislike, we knew we needed to find a way to create a faster pace.
So that's Theo Epstein of Major League Baseball. And Jeff, fair to say that these changes have been successful? They seem to have accomplished a lot of what Theo Epstein was talking about there.
How often is it, Anthony, you see in the corporate world a business completely overhaul itself and overnight those changes are generally not just accepted but successful? It's been, I think, a success beyond MLB's wildest dreams. And there was a lot of concern in New York at their offices about how this was going to be embraced by fans. This was Rob Manfred, the commissioner's legacy, really, because going to a sport like baseball that is so deeply rooted in tradition,
right,
and suggesting that you know better than the entire fan base. You know this game well enough to go and change it on the fly and run the risk of corrupting what has been a very successful product for well over a century right now. It's a hubristic thing to do. And, you know, for Rob Manfred to go out there and do it and see the success that there's been, yeah, there have been complaints. And there are fans who still look at the game and say, this isn't the game that I love, but this is the game we have now.
Right. And Jeff, we're going to be hearing from some of those fans ahead on the hour. Stick with us. So, listeners, now that the season has been underway, we're discussing how Major League Baseball's big rule changes are working out. When we come back, we're going to hear from fans, some players. Stick with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Today we're talking about the big changes to America's pastime. Major League Baseball this season implemented new rules affecting pitching, hitting, fielding, and base running. And we've been hearing from fans. We heard from listener Darren in Seattle, who says he likes to take his kids to baseball games and that the new rules improve the experience.
I actually took my kids to a Mariners game yesterday. 10 and 8 years old, so they are getting a little bit older. But typically, like last year, if we could make it 4 innings, that was considered a good day. And yesterday, we made it 8 innings due to the speed up of the pitching clock or the amount of time that was saved via that pitching clock. So for me personally, I'm loving it.
All right. We also heard from listener Keith, who called to say that he's not a fan of the new changes because he liked the fact that baseball is slow.
I liked the fact that they were taking their time and it added to the charm. And true baseball fans were, you know, in it for the long haul, no matter how long the game took. I mean, it's kind of a big deal when you go into the extra innings. You know, everybody's on the edge of their seat, so I don't think they needed to do that.
All right, so Jeff Passam is with us. He's senior MLB insider at ESPN, and he joins us from Kansas City. And Jeff, two views there from fans. And I want to sort of talk about a little bit the length of games. And I was really interested to learn this morning. So in 1909, the commissioner of baseball was worried that games were too long. Average game length then was an hour and 45 minutes. Then in the 1950s, the players were complaining the games were too long. The average length then was about 2 hours and 20 minutes. And since then, we know that the games have crept up to over 3 hours. So these new rules have brought that down by about a half hour. So that seems successful. But talk a little bit about why games just got longer and longer and longer through the 20th century and into the 21st century.
Well, there's certainly a few elements to it, Anthony. And I think one of them that is not going anywhere is the length of time between innings, i.e. how much money teams are getting from commercial breaks with television. And, you know, the timer between innings is 2 minutes and 30 or so seconds. And that's not going away. So you know you're going to have at least 17 built-in 2.5 minute breaks during a game. What else then contributed to average game time being well over 3 hours? It was the way that the players were conducting themselves on the field. And what I mean by that is, you know, psychology has become such an enormous part of the modern sports world. How do we prepare ourselves, athletes ask, in order to be at our best, in order to optimize what we have? And part of that optimization process in baseball was the idea that the more time you take between pitches, the more your body can recover from this maximum effort exertion that you're putting out there, whether it's on every pitch, every swing, everything you're trying to do on the field. And so batters would step out of the batter's box and adjust their gloves and take a breath and go through a routine. And pitchers had a process where they would step off the mound and fiddle with the ball and figure out what pitch they're going to throw. And what wound up being a 10 to 15 second process, if you go and look back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s and even as recent as the 1980s, turned into a slog of 20, 25, sometimes 30 plus seconds between pitches. And when you have hundreds of pitches a game, Anthony, that adds up.
Yeah,
and
sure
so,
does.
And so what Major League Baseball believed was going to happen with the pitch clock, and they believed this because they did testing in the minor leagues over thousands of games that proved unequivocally this was going to be the case. If athletes are forced to do something by rule and there is a penalty in place that has a negative consequence, they will change. They will adjust. And you know what? Turns out you didn't need to take your batting gloves and un-Velcro them. And it turns out you didn't need to take multiple cleansing breaths and stare in at the catcher for an unknown amount of time. You
right.
can still be effective going about your job, but doing it at a hastened pace.
Right. Well, we want to hear from a major league player. So here's Chicago Cubs pitcher Marcus Stroman. He got the first pitch clock violation of the season on opening day, and he talked about the new clock at a press conference afterwards.
It's tough, man. It's tough, this pitch clock. It's a big adjustment. I don't think people really realize, like, it just adds a whole nother layer of thinking. You got to be conscious of the clock. You got to be looking at the clock. You're trying to worry about the pitch. You're trying to worry about the guys on base. You're trying to worry about your grip. There's so many things going on now. So it definitely adds another layer to the game. That's tough, to be honest with you. And yeah, I do feel super rushed at times, like very, even in between innings, I'm running out there very early to warm up in between foul ball. Something comes off. You can't even have the time to rub the ball up. Like, I'm a big breather as well. And I feel like sometimes I'm not able to really catch my breath or take my proper breathing.
So, Jeff, that's Marcus Stroman. Of course, it affects the batters as well. They've got to get in the box and be ready to hit. Like I said, I saw Rafael Devers be called out on strikes on opening day here in Boston. What are you hearing from players about the new rules? Lots of complaints, concerns, or are they adjusting?
Yes.
Good answer.
You know, listen, they're athletes, right. So they're going to complain about pretty much anything and everything, and that's just par for the course, and it's fine. But I also think they recognize that Pandora's box has been opened here.
Yeah.
When the average game time, Anthony, is 3 hours, 6 minutes in 2022, and the average game time in 2023 with the pitch clock is 2 hours and 39 minutes, players understand that if you shave 27 minutes off of game time, Major League Baseball is not going to want to give a single second of that back. In fact, the idealized game time in the league's head is about 2.5 hours. And it's incredible some of the things we've seen, whether it's sub-2-hour games or even yesterday. There was a doubleheader between the Cleveland Guardians and Detroit Tigers that combined lasted 4 hours, 13 minutes. Last year alone, there were five individual 9-inning games that lasted longer than the 4-hour, 13-minute doubleheader between Cleveland and Detroit yesterday. So when we say it's a different game, we mean it's a different game. And, you know, players, I think, recognize that they just have to be part of this, that, you know, you can tilt at windmills all you want. You can fight the good fight. But however righteous your cause may be, and I think there's a pretty good argument that it's not very righteous at all, but however righteous you believe your cause may be, it's not going to matter because this is not going away.
You do hear, though, and we've heard it already on this hour. I certainly heard it on opening day in Boston. Baseball is a slow game. It's cerebral. It isn't for people with short attention spans. Baseball is about tradition. What's your answer to that for those traditionalists who say, don't mess with baseball. Let it just do its thing.
Yeah, earlier in the segment, we heard the fan talk about what real baseball fans like. I like to consider myself a real baseball fan. And let me tell you, I love those extra 27 minutes a game I'm getting back every night where I'm not watching guys walk in circles on the mound and adjust their batting gloves.
Yeah.
And I think the best argument in favor of why the pitch clock is bad is that in this world where everything is fast-paced, where leisure time is so minimal, having something that we can sit back and not need to be fully engaged with at every moment is actually a positive, actually a plus, actually something that we should look at and say, that's good for us. We need a little bit of that. But I think the vast majority of people would rather just look at it like, hey, I'm going to be extremely entertained for the entirety of this time. And if the consequence of that is that I miss a few more pitches when I go and grab a drink from the fridge, then so be it. I, as a fan, have to adjust just as players in their roles need to do the same.
So I want to bring another voice into the conversation. CJ Stewart is a former outfielder with the Chicago Cubs organization. He's also the founder of the LEAD Center for Youth. It's an Atlanta organization that aims to use the sport of baseball to help Black youth overcome poverty, crime, and racism. And he joins us from Atlanta. CJ Stewart, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Yes, I'm happy to be here with you, Anthony, and it's just been great to hear your perspective as well, Jeff.
Well, we'd love to hear yours as a former player. I also want to talk to you about what LEAD does and what the kids that you work with think about this. But let me start with your sort of perspective as a former player. What do you think about these latest baseball rule changes?
Yeah, so I was drafted twice by the Chicago Cubs and played in the Cubs organization for 2 years. And so when I started to see the rules, I started to think that I would still be able to play. I mean, I wasn't a power hitter whatsoever. I mean, I was more of a singles type of hitter, which definitely did not play well in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I ran well. So, you know, the rules would be in my favor today and that I probably would still be able to play. But let me stop you there.
CJ, they'd be better for you because you could take advantage of stealing more. There'd be more balls in play. You would benefit from hitting more singles, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's one of the advantages where, you know, if you're wanting more action, then you're definitely going to get more singles, especially with removing the shifts.
Yep.
And then also pitchers, you know, being limited as to how many times they can disengage from the pitcher's mound. which is going to increase a lot of stealing. So, you know, there was a time, especially when I was growing up here in Atlanta, where if you could run and just put the ball in play, I mean, that was considered baseball. And then it got to the long ball. But then also, too, I think that, you know, specifically as I'm working with and serving hundreds of Black boys in the inner city of Atlanta, as I'm talking to them, a lot of them are really excited about the faster tempo in the game. And they actually see that they and the style that they like could actually be a part of the game.
That's really interesting to hear. Jeff, I'd love to get you to respond to that, because CJ's talking about, you know, analytics change the game in such a big way. More home runs, more strikeouts, fewer hits, fewer stolen bases. CJ's describing a very different game with more action, more running, more hitting. This is really, really significant to me.
It is. And I think you can have both at the same time. You can have your cake and eat it too. I have a 15-year-old son who plays baseball, and he is very analytically inclined, and he gravitates toward things like exit velocity, which is how hard you hit the ball, and launch angle, which is the degree at which it comes off your bat, and the physics that teach you how the game actually works and gives you greater insight other than, oh, he hits the ball really hard. No, we can say to a specific tenth of a mile per hour how hard a ball is being hit. And yet on opening day, when my son saw pitch clock baseball for the first time, he texted me and said, I love the pitch clock. And I think that was fascinating to me, because oddly, you would think that the people who would be most against the pitch clock would be the traditionalists, because of the whole notion that baseball is a game that's not played on a clock. And yet I found, and this is anecdotally, but I found that more than the older fans, it's the younger fans who grew up with three-hour games and who only know baseball at this slogging pace, as opposed to the fans from the 50s and 60s and 70s who look at baseball with a pitch clock and say, wow, this looks a lot more like the game that I grew up watching. And that's where I think we go back to Major League Baseball. Let's be honest. Major League Baseball is run by a consortium of 40 to 60-year-old white men. It's just if you look at the C-suite, that is who is running MLB these days. And you have owners, you know, most of whom are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, who again grew up watching the game back in this time when it was a whole lot quicker and games were over regularly in the 2 to 2.5 hour range.
Right.
And we all want what we had in our childhood, whether that is rational or reasonable or not. There's just something about the way that we're wired as humans that we romanticize what we saw as kids. And I think the game right now with the pitch clock is a lot more like what owners and MLB executives had as kids than the children these days.
Well, CJ, Jeff alluded there to one of Major League Baseball's longtime challenges, and that's attracting a more diverse pool of players and a more diverse pool of fans. You know, you're working with Black kids down in Atlanta, using baseball to help them. You know, I think you mentioned they're attracted to a game that's faster paced. So is this good in terms of fulfilling that agenda to making baseball more diverse?
Yes. And to be specific, as we talk about the boys that I serve, you know, I used to be them. I was born and raised in financial and relational poverty and experienced disenfranchisement, and was also dysregulated. And so we start talking about disenfranchisement, we're simply just talking about there are things that are not afforded to people within a community because of their race. And then as far as being dysregulated, we're talking about youth that, because of that poverty, are experiencing high levels of frequent trauma. And when you start experiencing high levels of frequent trauma, it starts to affect your brain and how you process things. So that was even the case for me. And fortunately, it has been proven that sports in general is a tool that allows you to be regulated when you're dysregulated. But baseball has become this sport to where it has priced a lot of kids out, specifically Black youth that are poor. But one of the other things that I really bring into place as well, we talk about the financial cost, but we talk about the emotional and mental cost of having to be Black playing in a white sport. I know for me, I caught a lot of flack in the Black community when I started to play with white teams and travel ball at East Cobb. And immediately when I would come back home, it was, you're starting to act white. You're starting to talk white. You're starting to play white.
Hmm.
And so, you know, you have a lot of Black boys that are disenfranchised and dysregulated that are choosing not to play it because the long length of game is a white style of play. Just like even when I was hearing the caller talked about, you know, being a real baseball fan and wanting to be in the game for the long haul. Well, what does that mean if you are if you have the distinction of being a low income Black player who is not afforded the opportunity to play the game, who wants a faster pace? So now we're drawing those distinctions. And so,
CJ, yeah. Hold that thought. I want to pick this up after the break, which is upon us now. We're going to pick this up when we return. We're talking Major League Baseball, big rule changes with CJ Stewart. He's a former professional baseball player with the Cubs organization. And senior MLB insider at ESPN, Jeff Passan. A lot more to talk about. We're going to hear from other fans as well when we return. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Today we're talking about Major League Baseball's big rule changes, which went into effect when the new season began about 3 weeks ago. And we're asking, how are they working out? We're joined by senior MLB insider Jeff Passan and former outfielder with the Chicago Cubs organization and founder of the Lead Center for Youth, CJ Stewart. CJ joins us from Atlanta. And CJ, before the break, we were talking about one of Major League Baseball's longtime challenges, attracting a more diverse pool of players and fans. Maybe these new rules can begin to address that. But with regard to representation, particularly of Black players and Black fans, does baseball still have work to do here?
It does. And specifically, even, you know, within the Black community, because being Black is not monolithic, you know, middle class and upper middle class Blacks, you know, definitely can see themselves in the game because financially they can afford it and even can afford with, you know, any discomfort that may be caused, you know, as far as playing baseball, which is considered a white cultured sport. But if you're low income and African American, there's a lot of stigma and shame that can go into that. And so for me, you know, being born and raised in poverty, baseball was something that I really loved and enjoyed because during the time when I was a kid, a lot of African Americans were playing. My favorite player was Gary Matthews with the Cubs, and subsequently I ended up playing the Cubs organization and having him as a as one of my my coaches. Hmm. But you know, one of the other things that ends up happening is, especially for low-income Black children, and specifically in Atlanta, Atlanta's the number one city for income inequality in America based on race. And so poor people in Atlanta really feel that. And that level of trauma that is felt changes the brain. And so a lot of kids today were like me who struggle with ADHD. So, you know, a sport like baseball, if you're struggling with attention deficit disorder, it's a sport that you may not gravitate towards. But by making it faster pace and allowing kids who can run and like to run to see themselves in it. I think Major League Baseball, even though I know they're trying to bring in a diverse group of fans, but I think it's being heard loudly by low-income Black kids in Atlanta.
Hmm. Interesting. Jeff Passam, chime in on this and sort of add to this discussion about what Major League Baseball is doing, can do, should be doing about this issue of attracting a more diverse player base and fan base as well.
I think there are a couple of elements to it. One, I'm going to look beyond race for a second into socioeconomics, because I think that's an important part of this. And CJ alluded to it earlier. Baseball's turned into a country club sport in a lot of places. It takes a ton of money to get equipment, and even more money if your goal is to continue playing at the next level and be seen by scouts or major league organizations. You have to travel really around the country and pay exorbitant entry fees to these showcase events. And so the fact that baseball used to be a game where you could grab a stick and a ball and go to a diamond anywhere. There just aren't as many baseball diamonds in neighborhoods as there once were. And I think as far as the Black community goes, baseball's done an extremely poor job engaging Black youth. That's been the case for a generation now. And the ascent of the NFL, and especially in the Black community, the NBA's grip, both of those things are elements that Major League Baseball just hasn't done a good job of fighting off. Now, they have the Reviving Baseball in Inner Cities program, which has been something of a success. And they have urban youth academies in about half a dozen cities, including Kansas City, where I live. And I was just at the facility last week. Absolutely gorgeous. And has everything that you need in order for young players in communities like Kansas City to go and find opportunity. But it's sometimes less about opportunity and more about just desire to continue this game when baseball in the Black community isn't seen nearly with the same regard as basketball and football. How does Major League Baseball find a group of people who feel like they are not part of the game sometimes and make them see that, yes, not only are you part of the game, not only do you need to be part of the game, but our job as a sport is to make you feel like you're part of the game.
Right. Well, I want to shift back to get some of hear response from fans about these rule changes. And as we've been hearing, some of them have been a little bit frustrated with a few of the new rules. One of those people is Cole Davis. He's a truck driver from Fargo, North Dakota, and a lifelong Minnesota Twins fan.
Here in Fargo, we have the Mighty 790, which plays most of the Twins games on the AM radio. If the game is on while I'm at work, I am a truck driver, but I'm a local driver. So quite often I'm done for the day by the time the game is on, unless it's an afternoon game. But I'll listen on AM radio. I have a app on my phone where I can watch game highlights.
And like a lot of fans, Cole loves love of baseball started with his dad.
My story is very, very far from unique, but I remember learning the game from my dad. My love for the game was taught to me. Baseball, I think, is very different than other forms of sports. Other sports are fast paced. They're playing checkers. Baseball is chess. So much more history, so much more backstory, so many more different ways of thinking about the game and playing the game. If you don't have that basis, you know, it does limit your ability to understand and enjoy the game on a level. I found that the more that I learned about the game myself, the more I learned about its history, about its strategy, the more deeper I fell in love with the game. And the people who don't like baseball, a lot of them just didn't have that.
So fair to say that Cole is a traditionalist and he likes the slow pace, doesn't think it needs to be speeded up. His biggest frustration with modern baseball is that it can be a challenge to watch the game. Seeing them in person is expensive. Exclusive TV contracts mean that a lot of the games are blacked out by his local providers and streaming services. And this is something he says the new rules aren't fixing.
If I were able to go on MLB TV or Bally's and actually watch my home team's games, I would play. I would absolutely pay. but I've already tried on both and they block out my home market. So now how do I expose that to my children? How do I pass that on to the next generation? You know, I can sit here and I can take them out in the front yard and I can play catch and I can teach them to swing a bat. You know, I can teach them how to keep an eye on the ball and follow through. But part of the magic is having the team that you love. You know, Manfred says viewership is down. Well, of course viewership is down if you're going to block fans from being able to watch their home market teams. You know, he's attacking the wrong problem.
So Manfred there, of course, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, who is referring to Jeff Passam. C.J. Stewart, respond to that. I'll start with you, C.J., a lot in that cut, but the high cost of games, blackouts, everything that sort of raises this challenge about how you keep this tradition alive, how you make it fresh and new to a new generation of kids and eventually players.
Well, what I heard in that, I just thought about when I was 8 years old. It was 1984 is when I fell in love with playing baseball, and it was a long, hot summer in Atlanta. And I had the benefit of being able to watch Chicago Cubs baseball games on the Superstation in the daytime and Braves games at night on the Superstation. And so that's how I fell in love with baseball, is being able to see the games. And so in between those times, and so 1984 was a very, very pivotal year for me. And then even also, too, as I think about the boys that we serve that are low income, that have games that are blacked out, that can't see those. Fortunately, we have year-round programming that allows them to really be connected to the game. We also have a lot of colleges that are here local that they can go, but you do need to be able to see these games and see yourself in it in order to remain engaged. But I also say, when he made the point about, it being passed down from his father, within the Black community, yes, just like a lot of other races, we have fathers that aren't in the home. So even in that messaging, sometimes it can be heard by Black kids to make them feel like they can't be in the game unless their father passes it down. And there's so many other ways to pass this game along, even if your father's not home.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jeff, one of the things we heard in that cut was this frustration about blackouts. So I'm thinking now about sort of future rule changes and future changes that baseball needs to make. Are they seriously considering fixing that problem? This is the fact that because of exclusive TV contracts, sometimes when you're just trying to follow your own team on your local TV provider, you can't. Huge frustration for lots of people.
Yes, and a completely warranted one, too. When you're trying to sell a product and it's not available, are you really selling the product? And that's a question that I've been asking. I think I wrote my first column on blackouts 16 years ago. And still, it is a problem that has not been fixed. And it hasn't been fixed because Major League Baseball owners look at the amount of revenue that they generate every year from local television contracts. And it amounts to more than 10% of the money that they bring in. And they're making the calculation that whatever harm and damage we get from our fans or potential fans not being able to see the game, we make up for in the money that we're bringing in. And I think it's a miscalculation. I think it's led, frankly, to the place where we're at right now, where fans look at Major League Baseball and say, why should we trust you on anything when we can't even see your games? And there's a solution that could be coming, but it's not a solution that's born of this idea that Major League Baseball owners have suddenly become, benevolent creatures. No, it's the fact that many of these regional sports networks that broadcast games are in bankruptcy, and that Major League Baseball now all of a sudden wants to put together a television package, a national package that does not have blackouts and includes all 30 games. But the problem you run into there is that there are successful RSNs, like with the New York Yankees and New York Mets and Boston Red Sox and many of the big market teams that teams would want to pay for. And those teams that do have successful RSNs certainly don't want to give up the businesses they've created.
Jeff, I know we got to let you go in just a couple more minutes, so I want to play one more piece of tape just to get your response to this issue. Matt Strom, a pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, has raised concerns about how some stadiums, because of the new rules, are extending their beer sales now that game time is shorter. So here's Strom on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast this month.
So now with a faster-paced game, and me just being a man of common sense, if the game is going to finish quicker, would we not move the beer sales back to the sixth inning to give our fans time to sober up and drive home? Instead, we're going to the eighth, and now you're putting our fans and our family at risk driving home with people who have just drank beer 22 minutes ago.
Yeah, this seems like a pretty big issue, Jeff. Is MLB taking this seriously?
Well, if by taking this seriously you mean reversing the policies that are allowing beer sales in the eighth inning, no, MLB is not taking it seriously. And it's hard to refute what Matt Strom says. I think the only arguments otherwise are one of them is, yeah, but bars, you know, there are drinking establishments anywhere where people are driving home. It doesn't make it any better. It's just more a reality, more that's how life is. But Major League Baseball certainly should keep that in mind and discourage people from buying beer that close to the end of the game by, say, continuing the old policy where beer sales were cut off after the seventh inning.
Right. Well, Jeff Passam, I know we've got to let you go. You've got a hard out at 55 past the hour, so we're very grateful to you. Jeff Passam, senior MLB insider at ESPN, thank you so much for everything you brought to this hour. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure's always mine, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And C.J. Stewart, founder of the Lead Center for Youth in Atlanta and former outfielder for the Chicago Cubs organization, is still with us. C.J., it's good to have you. I want to come back to sort of this general idea of rules changes and talk to a former ball player about this. Are there any new rules you don't like? I mean, we've been talking about the need for change, but is there something traditional as a baseball player that you want to hold on to?
No, not at all. I mean, like I said, I like them all because it, you know, it really fits me and my personality and, you know, just the way I process things. I mean, I still struggle with ADHD even to this day. So even as a player for me and a fan, the game always felt too long. I mean, it's so funny too, because I'm embarrassed to say it, but it just speaks to the point. Growing up playing in the inner city of Atlanta, you know, we would play seven inning games and for high school. And then I remember going into college and we had a nine inning game. I was playing at Georgia State University and the game was, you know, seventh inning. I'm just kind of like, all right, well, we, you know, we won. It was like, no, man, we actually got to play nine innings. And I'm like, dang, it was just. So I think for me, you know, just, you know, speeding the game up and making sure there's a lot of action. So like when I watch basketball or football games, that's the thing that I do really like the most about those. But I love baseball and I'm just glad that we're speeding it up.
Right. And what works so well about baseball, or what aspects of baseball help you most with the work you're doing with young Black kids in Atlanta?
I mean, I'll take it all the way back to 1920 when Rube Foster created the Negro Leagues. And there were a lot of conversations that were even had when they were in Atlanta at the Butler Street YMCA. Hmm. And you know, back then, baseball was a rites of passage for Black boys to become strong Black men. And beyond baseball, it was commerce. It was real estate. It was a lot of different things. So we use that to help Black boys win at the game of life here in Atlanta.
All right. Well, thank you for the work you do. C.J. Stewart, founder of the Lead Center for Youth in Atlanta. He's a former outfielder for the Chicago Cubs organization. C.J., thanks for talking about the work you do and for talking about the changes that Major League Baseball have put in place for this season. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. It was a fun hour. Get out there. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the spring and the summer. Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.